Today's daf in Masechet Yevamot, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yirat Kodesh, is daf Tzadik Beit, and we're holding on daf Tzadik Aleph, Omud Beit, three lines up from the bottom, Omer Rav Ashi. All of these discussions in the Mishnah about where an aid, it was accepted, and then it turned out that we have two aidim that come along and say, no, actually, her husband is alive, or the husband walks in, and so on. That's all very nice, but if it was just rumors that are circulating that the husband is alive, l'kala lo chashina, just because people are saying they say he's alive, we hear from people that everybody assumes he's alive, that type of call would not make a difference to a Beis Din. And we wouldn't say that she has to be yotze from her husband and that kol advar me'eluba doesn't apply. What are we talking about over here? I mean, are we talking about a call that came after this woman had already married Opi the Eid Echad? I mean, Ilay Mekola Debotin is Suin. Ha'omer Rav Ashi Chada Zimna. We have a general statement of Rav Ashi that that is the case. The Omer Rav Ashi, Kol Kola Debotin is Suin Lo Chashina. We never take into consideration a kol. Forget about all of these cases. I mean, there's plenty of cases where a kol could end up ruining a marriage. I mean, let's say you have a kohen who's married to someone, and then there's rumors about that she was once married and she got a get and the kohen's not allowed to be married to her, stuff like that. We never worry about such a thing to break up a marriage based on a rumor. So since Rav Ashi said that as a general halacha, why would he need to say that in the context of our Mishnah, where the woman is believing that their husband is dead based on this or Raz Beis Din or whatever? So, of course, it's no different than anything else, is it? No, it is, actually. I'll tell you why Rav Ashi needed to paskin in this case specifically. Because man de tema ho va taila beidina visharninan la kekala de kaminisu indami vetitzar. Look, I mean, the bottom line is, this entire case was very suspicious from the beginning. You see, in a case where somebody marries without there being any kind of question, and then you raise a question later. Well, people say that this woman is a divorcee and you shouldn't pay attention to a question that's raised later. I understand that. That's what Rav Ashi said. But what about in a case where all along there were serious issues? I mean, we had a cheskas iser, cheskas eishes ish, and now we're going to come along. We can't be matir her unless she comes to Beis Din and she gets a psak. So that means that all along we had our doubts, right? So then maybe I would have thought that in such a case where a kol comes along and confirms our doubts, that over there Rav Ashi would be moda. You can't just laugh off that kol. I mean, it's not as if we didn't worry about it in the first place. It's very reasonable to say that, oh my gosh, you know, it looks like she really had a husband. And therefore, I need to know that once we make this psak in Beis Din, she goes in and gets married, it is indeed the same as assuming that everything is fine. And now a kol is not going to break up a marriage that was based on that. Kamash malan. Okay, then we had the next case. And we spoke about the halacha of a woman who gets married with the Rishus of Beis Din, which means that she was relying on an Eid Echad. Those are, remember, equivalent statements. Shelo Rishus means Al Shtei Eidim, and Rishus means Al Pi Eid Echad, as the Beis Din was Matir. So we said over there that she, even though we have all of these things, and she has to get divorced, and she has to leave both husbands, the halacha is that she still does not have to bring a korban chatas because she relied on the Beit Din. Omar Zeiri, look, I mean, it's true that that's what the Mishnah says, but that's not the halacha. Leita lematnitin, because of a braita that we have in the Beis HaMedrash, which I have a Kabbalah on, that is the way it was decided, the halacha, to be semich on that later braita. And the braita says, Tani Beit Midrash, this was a braita that was accepted in the Beit HaMidrash as a given, legabe the halacha, that if Beis Din, now look how similar this is. Here it is Shabbos, and people are in a rush to do certain things that needed to be done after Shabbos. Maybe there was a funeral that needed to be taken care of, whatever. So they go to Beis Din. Beis Din is asked, when can we bury this mace? And Beis Din decides that the sun has set. So they all go out and they bury the mace, and then out comes the sun. Now, this is exactly like our case. Besdin said, your husband is dead, and then out comes the husband, right? So it's exactly this case, I would say. And in that case, the halacha is that if in the end, l'besof zarcha, the sun shines, then that's not called a hora'ah. That's just called a mistaken fact. I mean, a Besdin does not have any more rights to tell you facts. I mean, they're telling you a fact, and they made a mistake about the fact. What does that have to do with their koyach Besdin, you know? So certainly it's not called a hora. It's a straight-out ta'ut. And that would mean that in the case of the Mishnah, it's a straight-out ta'ut. They said your husband is dead, and the husband walks in. It's like saying the sun is set, and there's the sun. So something that is obvious to everyone, that it was based on a misconception. So over here, it was simply based on a misconception. They thought that this guy was telling the truth, and they paskin on that basis, but he wasn't. Reb Nachman says, nonsense. This is not a no comparison at all. Over here, it's a ra'ah. Obviously, says Reb Nachman, teidat ra'ah. Of course it's a ra'ah. I mean, the Besdin can't rely on an eid echad, can it? No, never. So how come we're paskining on the basis of this eid echad? So, b'kol ha'Torah kula, eid echad lo me'eman. Over here, it is me'eman. Explain to me why. I mean, obviously, it's because this is a specific hora of Beit Din. She needed to go to Beit Din. Beit Din didn't tell her that her husband's alive. Beit Din paskin with this whole complicated logic that if we're going to be machmer on her besofah, that then we can rely on the investigation that she conducts subsequently, and that therefore, in this case, we'll take what it is that the eight said. I mean, so it's, that's not called a ta'ut in fact. That's called a ta'ut in hora'a. And therefore, how do you compare the case of the sun shining out to the case of the husband showing up? Whereas Rava says, on the contrary, I think that Zairi is 100% correct. The case is exactly the case of the sun shining when the Besdin said that it's already Matzah Shabbos. I'll prove it to you. This cannot be a hora'ah. Okay, here's my very clear understanding. In the nature of a hora'ah, let's say that Besdin actually did a hora'ah paskening that a certain type of chelev was not considered to be chelev, was considered to be shuman, or a certain type of dam wasn't usher, right? And then they realized that it was a mistake, and they made an announcement, listen, we made a terrible mistake, this is considered to be chelev, and this is considered to be dam. Now, if they come back and they say, listen, let's rely on our first psak, right? So, ki ader amri le'ater, they don't come up with a new reason. They just say, look, it's really important for us to be mater these things. Let's rely on the first psak. We laughed them out of the court. Some court. So the idea would be that we would not be allowed to be samech on them, and in no way, forget about it, chayav achatas or not chayav achatas, it would be a joke. So nobody would pay any attention. So no one would pay any attention to them at all, right? But let me ask you in this case, okay, a single witness comes along, right? Based on that, the Besdin paskin, she can go get married. Then we find out that the husband actually is alive. So two witnesses come along, and they say, no, the husband is alive. And then, a month later, another witness comes along, one witness, and says, well, look, I don't know what happened before. I mean, that was last month. I can tell you that this week, her husband died. So then what will Besdin do? Will they say, well, we already gave this hora'ah, and it turned out to be a hora'at that was usur. We made a mistake. We shouldn't have relied on an eid echad. And therefore, I'm sorry, but we cannot be matir this woman on an eid echad. No, they're not going to say that. They're going to say the first reliance on that eid echad was a mistake, and we thought that he was telling the truth, but he wasn't. And now we've got another eid echad, and we'll go ahead and make the same mistake again. So obviously, it's not a hora'ah, right? Because ki hadar ata eid achrinon sharinon la. If another one eid comes along and says, but now he is dead. I don't know what happened before. I don't know who that guy was that said he was dead earlier. I don't know who the two witnesses are. I only know that last week I was there and I saw him die. So my timer. Because obviously it's not a hora'ah. You can't redo the same hora'ah b'ta'ut, but if you made one mistake, it doesn't mean that the next time you do that psak that it's a mistake, because it's basically a question of a factual error. That's all. It's okay. You make an error once. That doesn't mean you're going to make it again. So you can make the same idea. And the truth is that Rabbi Eliezer holds also that it's a ta'ut, like Ze'iri held. And it's not considered to be a hora'ah, like we just said, the Tanya. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, look, man, is this talking about a woman who got married and her husband shows up and you're telling me she doesn't have to bring a korban chatas? That's nonsense. Let the Yikov Adin et Ahar just drill straight through that mountain. Now, Yikov Adin et Ahar means that no matter what kind of reasons you have that make you assume otherwise, and it could be a whole mountain full of assumptions, how about drilling through your nonsensical assumptions and getting to the bottom of the story? When you get to the bottom of the story, there's absolutely no reason that this woman is not supposed to bring you a korban chatas, and it damn well better be a nice fat chatas, because all of this stuff that you're telling her, it's all mutter and this and that, you make this a heavy-duty chatas, okay? A chatas shmina. That's the point. Now, I mean, if you're going to tell me that this is a simple mistake, so then she would have to bring a korban. If you tell me that it's a hora'ah, why does she bring a korban? This is a yachid who's being semech on a hora'ah of a beit din, right? Why right? I don't understand. Can't it be that Rabbi Eliezer was simply saying, as we know to be the fact, do not trust this Mishnah because it's based on the Mishnah in Huriot that says that a yachid she'asa pi beit din is potter, and just like the Gemara comes out over there in Huriot, that is not the halacha, and that in fact, if a yochid is semech on bezdin, it doesn't matter. He still has to go ahead and bring a korban. Maybe that's all Rabbi Eliezer is saying. That look, you know, the Mishnah over here was shelo kedin, because the din is that even though she relied on hora'ah, you're chayev. But why are you saying that this proves that Rabbi Eliezer holds that it was a mistake and not a hora'ah? Says the Gemara. So then explain to me, what is this Yikov HaDin et Ahar jazz? It's ridiculous. No, Yikov HaDin et Ahar. He should simply have said, Yochid Shasa Alpi Bezdin is Chayev. That's all he should have said. If he's saying Yikov HaDin et Ahar, it means, look, get some bulldozers and get rid of the bull. Because all of this stuff that you were saying is irrelevant. There's no Hora'ah here. It's a straight out Ta'ut. Otherwise, there's no meaning to those words, Yikov HaDin et Ahar. And therefore, it's clear that Rebbe Eliezer was saying, this is not a hora'at beit din at all. This is actually a simple mistake. Okay, so let's move on. In any event, gentlemen, the halacha is, although this is very strange, very, very strange. We'll talk about it when we go a little bit further on this. But the point is that in reality, we paskin that a yachid she'asa al pi beit din is actually chayev, like the Gemara comes out in Huriot, against that Mishnah in Huriot. We've got very few people over here who are willing to show themselves, okay? And we've got even a Gershi who's showing himself, and now Gavi's hiding himself, which means Gershi's going to follow suit in no time at all. And when the Gabbai doesn't show himself, the Rebbe doesn't show himself, and then the whole thing becomes a cascade of names instead of people. Gosh, everybody's got to take achrayus over here. Come on, Rebbe. Do it, man. Okay. Fine. Now I'm feeling stronger. So here's the problem. The Rambam paskins that a yochid she'asa al pi hora'at, gosh, a glimpse of David Solomon, al pi hora'at beitin is chayev. The way the Gemara comes out in Hurias, and the most amazing thing is, that the Rambam, when he brings the halacha here of our Mishnah, says that she's high of a korban, and he justifies it. He says, because this is not a hora'at beit din, this is a flat-out mistake. So he paskins, like the sugya here, that this is the equivalent of let the sun shine in, and it was Mitzvah Shabbos, but it wasn't, right? So if that's the case, there's a pretty big stira in the Rambam, as the Lachamishna points out, all of the Noisei Kalim in the Rambam said it's crazy. How can the Rambam paskin both of those things? If the din is that even if it were Orat Beit Din and the Yochid would be Chayev, then why does he justify the Psak that the Yochid is Chayev by saying that it's a Ta'ut? That's like really weird. So I mean, basically what we're going to have to say is, that there must be different dargas of this idea of the ta'ut in bezdin. Let me get the lushan of the mefarshim over here. so that we can talk about the possibilities, because the Ritva, oh, I lost the place over here, because the screen got, oh, yeah. How do I get rid of this big screen? I don't know. I've got three screens open. I drive myself crazy by not knowing where one of them is. Remind me, gentlemen, there's got to be a way of making one of these screens smaller, right? I can't remember what that is. Ah, okay, now I remember. There we go. Of course, you've become much smaller. But anyway, here's the way, basically, that seems to come out according to the Ritva, okay? So there are three different dargas over here. If you have a hora'ah that is a real hora'ah, meaning that we take this particular case into consideration, and we need to determine, based on an entirely new analysis of the halacha. Remember, I wrote about this in one of the essays, what's considered to be a hora'ah. That's hora'ah mechudesh, as opposed to just saying over halacha in the Shulchan Aruch, which is not considered to be mura b'fnei rab, right? We already know this distinction. In this case, it's true that there is a hora'ah. And that was the discussion we had before. I mean, there must be a hora'ah. How could it be simple ta'ut? Because normally we wouldn't rely on an eid echad, right? And the whole argument in our Gemara. But the point is that it is not a hora'ah mechudeshet. It's just a general psak that a bezdin should paskin al pi eid echad, because we made this takana that we want to avoid any problems of igun. And therefore, the bezdin is following the overall structure of halacha that was kavua centuries before. So even though it requires the bezdin to apply that din, that is not considered to be a hora'ah mechudeshet. So where a bezdin comes along and paskins with a hora'ah, so then we have a machlokas where the Yochid Sha'as Alpi Bezdin is Chayev or Potter, and the Rambam paskins that the person is Chayev in general. But then we have a Hora'ah, which is an approach that was determined centuries before. So over here, the Rashba says that in that case where you're following a Sak that had been poshet b'chol Yisrael, that this is the way we act, and we've been acting this way for hundreds of years, and the woman would be semech on an application like that in terms of the eid echad, that is considered to be an onus, and therefore you would be potter from the karma. So where you're going to be listening to the Bezdin, and this was the tremendous chiddush of Hurios b'chol, it may be that the Bezdin made a mistake, but that doesn't mean that you should make a mistake. It's an amazing level of personal responsibility. And indeed, that's how the Rambam paskins. You would be chayev. But where we're dealing with something that has been the standard of behavior for centuries because of a takana that was made ages ago, you are not mechuyev to outthink that. And therefore, you are really would be potter if it's considered to be onus. But the problem is where you have a hora'ah like that, which is the case we have in our sugya, and you're basing it on this halacha to rely on an eid echad. There's a machlokas that we just had between Zeir and Reb Nachman. Is this called a hora'ah, or is this called a ta'ut? Therefore, the Rambam has to say, this, even though it's an ancient standard of behavior, is not a hora'ah, it's a ta'ut, because its application to you is in error. And therefore, you would be chayav a korban, so everything fits out beautifully. So once you take this approach, then it works out in the Rambam as well. This is how the Rashba Ritva understand it. Okay, beautiful. I thought you'd enjoy that. Anyway, let me go back to full screen here. Whoop. Okay. Yes, there's three. Exactly. There's the gold standard behavior that was determined before, which is pure hora'ah, made as a takana centuries before. But then there's this strange case, which you need to apply that to the particularities of whether in this case the woman will actually do a good job of analyzing it. Can we trust this eid echad and so on? That, like we just said, is the machlokas over here. Is it a hora'ah or is it ta'ut? And Rambam is paskening it's a ta'ut. And that's why he says, even in this case, where there is a gold standard, it's still chayev in a carbon because it's a plain ta'ut to have applied it to this case. Okay, excellent. Now, when we say another fascinating thing, this is a beautiful idea. The woman gets a psak from Besdin. And then she says, listen, I'm relying on Besdin. Remember, according to this Mishnah, we're going with the assumption that Yochanan Salpi Besdin is actually Potter, right? So she goes ahead, and then she was Gilgula. Now, it doesn't explain what that means. She did something wrong. So then she cannot say, well, I was just listening to Besdin. What do you mean you were just listening to Besdin? If you were listening to Besdin, you wouldn't have gone out and done something that you know that the Besdin would have whipped you for. So you're not really listening to Besdin. It's a bunch of nonsense. So why would you be putter? We're not listening to Besdin. Okay. But what do we mean when we say Kilkila? So Rebbe Elazar says, look, it means that she did something that was inappropriate. She didn't go and get married. The Besdin told her she can go and get married. And she now starts hanging out with different men and she's sleeping with these guys and so on. So then she's going to say, well, I'm only listening to Besdin. What? Besdin told you to become a prostitute? What are you talking about? Besdin told you to go get married. So you're not listening to Besdin. That's what Rebbe Elazar says. Rabbi Yochanan says, no, that's not the point. The point Kilkala means that she did something that was an iser of marriage. So let's say she was an almana, she goes and marries a kohen gadol. Or she's a grusha of a chalutza, she goes and marries a kohen. So if you hold, like Rabbi Elazar, that any type of doing something that the Besdin would never have approved of, so she's stam is hanging around with guys, so obviously, koshikein alaman ala kohen gadol, that is considered to be kilkala, and she can't claim she's listening to Besdin. Mashen can according to Rabbi Yochanan, that we're talking about only where she does something, like Alman Ala Kohen Gadol, that then she would be Chayev Achatas, not because Alman Ala Kohen Gadol, obviously, but because she was actually married to this other guy, who turned out never to have died. But Zinta, that's not considered to be going against the Besdin, because she could say, look, you guys paskind that I'm not married, okay, and that I can proceed as if I'm not married. Now, the fact that I don't want to be married and I like hanging out casually with guys is nothing to do with your psak. Because if I can go get married, then I can do what I want. Because I didn't ask you about anything like that. So therefore, the psak is that basically she could say, did you guys say that I can go and get married to someone else, which means that I am currently not married? Was that your psak or not? Yes? Fine. Thank you very much. I proceeded totally on the basis of that psak. I never would have done something that would have been an iser that the Torah said I'm not allowed to do. I'm just being casual about sex. I mean, that's not so terrible. It may be inappropriate, but I mean, it's not as if you said, no, you can only get married legally. Why is that the psak of Besdin? Basically, the psak of Besdin is that I'm a pnuya. And in fact, Tanika Basi de Rabbi Yochanan, we have a brayta that says, Horu beitin lehinase. So the Besdin says she can go and get married. And she goes ahead and she's mekalkelet. So far, it's the same as the Mishnah, but the Abraita explains what do we mean when we say mekalkelet. Kigun almanala kohen gadol, grusha v'chalutza kohen gadol. Dafke that case, which of course is Rabbi Yochanan's case. So over there, chayevet korban, and according to Rabbi Elazar, remember we had before that according to Rabbi Elazar, every different act of bia is mechayev a separate chatas, because he holds that biot are mechalkot. And in the end, remember the Gemara said it isn't only biot, it's mechalkot. It's every single thrust is considered to be a separate act. That's mechayev. We said only Rabbi Elazar. So we're actually not giving you the full scale of Rabbi Elazar's psak over here. But the bottom line is that you bring a korban on every single act of Israel. And the Chachomim say, no, you bring one chatas for whatever iser it is, which is eshes ish over here. But, I mean, the Chachomim are made that if she gets married five times, you know, after this, that certainly gufot are mechulakim, even if biot are not mechulakim, and therefore she would be chayev a chatas for every single individual that she married, she chayevet korban ha-kol achad v'yachad ha-kol the gufin mechulakim, so each man is a different iser. That, yes, but certainly not every single intercourse with every single person. And certainly not every single thrust and every single intercourse. That they never said. And now we are ready for our singular. Richie, give it to us, man.
On that note,
So, further issues, now getting in directly into Yibum issues. Thank you, dear Richard. Well, I wouldn't have said thank you if he was only a name. Little did I know. So what the Mishnah talks about now is the same situation where we're relying on testimony, but this time the testimony is as regards Yibum specifically, which of course interrelates the Perek with this whole idea of relying on the facts, what defines the facts in terms of Yibum, in terms of Eish HaSish, and so on. So over here we have a case which starts off the same. A woman's husband goes to Medina Tayam. This time, he takes along their only child with him. And then they come and they say to her, you know, your husband died, and then your child died. So the boat collapsed, whatever. So not only are you free to marry, you don't even need Yibum. Okay, we're going to see later on, are we talking about whether there was one aid, we're talking about two aid, because remember, we used the same word, amru, when we meant one aid in the first Mishnah. So no one's going to talk about this later, but that's not our concern right now. What we want to know is, when we relied on this psak, she went ahead and she married somebody. So she was, in the event that she would have been a Yavama and she married somebody, she would be a Yavama Lashuk. But she was told that at the moment that her husband died, there was still a child that was alive who only drowned a minute later. And therefore, the time of the death of her husband, which is the determining factor as we've seen throughout the sugya, there was no chiyuv of Yibum. And remember, because of Derachel Darchei Noam, we understand and take for granted that if the child subsequently dies, even if it's another second, there will not be a reoccurrence of a chiyuv of Yibum. So she goes in and she gets married, and then it turns out that it was the opposite. The child had actually died first, and then the husband died, and therefore she really did require Yibum in that case. And the halacha is that she has to leave her husband, and the havlad arishon v'acharon mamzer. Now, this is all going according to Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva holds that if there's an Isra Lav, is there an Isra Lav of Yavama Lashuk? Yes. Lo tiyesh adamet achutza. That's an Isra Lav. According to Rabbi Akiva, Kiddushin is not tov sebechai ve'lavim. And therefore, according to Rabbi Akiva, the din is that the children will be mamzerim, because he holds in the same way that Kiddushin is not tov sim, the children are mamzerim. Fine. So, I'm telling you, this Zoom is amazing. It's got Gershi and Gavi together now. Sneaky. Just sneaky. Constantly moves. You know, the same way the man can determine what belongs together. Maybe we can actually look at Zoom to make determinations of Mamzeris and so on and so forth. It definitely seems to be run by Ruach HaKodesh. Anyway, it also put the Rebbe together with the Gabbai. It's an astounding kind of thing. But you're not supposed to look, because then it tries to be Mechasa. So, in this case, since, according to Rabbi Akiva, the marriage is actually not chal, the children are mamzerim. And whether it's the Vlad HaRishon, the Acharon, whether it's before we found out, after we found out, makes a difference. The child is a mamzer, which is pretty clear. I mean, what does that have to do with when we found out? The fact is that she was married to an Israel Lav, and it's a little bit absurd to tell me before or after. Her knowledge is not the point. Doesn't matter whether she knew she was doing something wrong or not. It's the fact that makes the point of Mamzeris. The Gemara will ask this. Okay, then we have another situation. So first they tell her, your child died, and then your husband died, and you need Yibum. So she goes ahead and she marries the Yavam. Then they tell her, no, actually, your husband died first, and this Yavam is an erva of Eish HaSach. We can't believe you're sitting there sleeping with this guy who's an Isser Karis. So over there, also, everybody agrees, not only Rabbi Akiva, that here we're dealing with an Isser Karis. Whether this is a child from before you found out or after you found out is irrelevant. The child is a mamzer. Also obvious, and why would anybody think it makes a difference whether it's before or after she found out? Again, the Gemara is going to ask. Now we have a third case. Over here, they told her, your husband died. She goes ahead and she marries based on this. And achar kach amrula, then they tell her, now here's the variation from our mission, okay? Then they tell her, you know, your husband did die, but he died after you married this guy. So he's currently dead, but you married while he was alive. So then what's the din? So she still has to leave her second husband. But in this case, Avladri shown mamzer, only the child who had been born or had been conceived while her husband was still alive. So in other words, they say, look, for, you know, the first 3 months that you were married, he was actually alive. He died only afterwards. So that child that was conceived while the husband was alive, obviously is a mamzer. But the second one is not a mamzer because by that point, the husband actually was not alive. Now, there's a machlokas over here whether this is only means midiraisa or whether, yes, as Gershi points out, or whether based on the previous Mishnah, since the marriage was done by Isser, even in this case where it turns out that when we find out that the husband was alive, he's already dead, that in this case as well, based on the previous Mishnah, there would have been a derabbanan mamzer. That's a machlokas, whether it is exactly similar to the case of the Mishnah before, or whether since Lamaisa, the marriage is currently to someone who's dead and had been dead for most of this period, whether the child is a mamzer. Okay, next we want to talk about how about if there was just kiddushin and there was no actual act of sleeping together. So Amrullah made Baalech, and she accepted kiddushin from another guy, and then her husband shows up before she ever gets to the chuppah. So then she actually is allowed to go back to her husband because they never consummated the marriage at all. We were talking about a case where she had married the other guy, and then we have all of these 16 issues and so on. But over here, thank God, nothing was wrong in the end, except that she accepted a ring from the guy. So then, even in the event that the guy had given her a get from that marriage, which was never consummated, it was only a kiddushin, and he gave her a get, he does not possel her from the kahuna. And if in the end this first husband does die, that get is not even a reyach get. It doesn't even have a smell of a get to aser for kohen. There was nothing at all that we were gozer. And remember, we made the difference between or we gozer that the get should be, we'll pretend it was a get that was only, we asked for this Mishnah earlier, and we said the difference is, did she do anything wrong in actuality, in the end? So in this Mishnah, since all she did was accept the ring, we did not give her this knas to pretend that she needs a get, and afilu reach haget einba, as we said earlier. And therefore, lo pasla min hakahuna, and Rebbe Elazar ben Matya points out that there's a pasuk that makes this very clear, because it says in the actual Isser to the Kohanim, Isha grusha me isha. So what does that mean? A woman who's divorced from her husband. That means do not take any level of gerushin from a woman who's divorced from someone who isn't her husband. And that's what happened over here. A guy gave her a get, but he was never married to her. And he had only given her kedushin, so it doesn't even look like they were married. We didn't make a din of even reach haget in that case. Okay, this business of Rishon Acharon, what in the world? I mean, I understand in the third case, Rishon V'Acharon is a meaningful statement. Rishon means while the husband was still alive, and Acharon means the ones born after the husband actually had died. Well, obviously, there's a real serious difference whether it's a mamzer or not, or whether it's a mamzer to your rights or mamzer to rabbanan, depending on which Rishonim you go like. But what difference could Rishon v'Acharon mean in the first two cases? I mean, what are you saying? Rishon means before we found out that he was alive, and Acharon means after we found out. I mean, just say the Vlad is a mamzer, because mamzeris has nothing to do with intent. Says the Gemara, yeah, you're absolutely right. The only reason we use those words is to keep the Mishnah parallel. Because since in the third case, where over there it does make a big difference, that third case was they told her, your husband died, and she gets married. And then they tell her, well, actually at the time that you got married, he was alive, but he did die. So then it makes a big difference, because the Rishon is while the husband was alive, then it's a mamzer. The Acharon ain't no mamzer. There it makes all the difference in the world. We kept the Mishnah parallel, and we talked in the first and the second case. We also said Rishon v'Acharon mamzer, even though it's really irrelevant. Now, Tana Rabbana, you have to understand that what we said about the woman who goes ahead, and she was meant to be a Yavama, and instead she married somebody from outside, and she was over on the lav. Well, it's only a lav. I mean, so why is the Vlad Mamzer? Because it's going to live in Rabbi Akiva. And Rabbi Akiva holds, Ein Kiddushin Tovsim B'chai Ve'lavim. Aval Chachamim Omrim, there's no Yevama, there's no Mamzer that would come from the Isser of Yevama Loshuk, of the Isser of Lo Tiyeh Eshet Amet Achutza, that cannot produce a Mamzer. Wait a minute. That's a very strange way to speak. I mean, what you would want to say, if Rabbi Akiva said, Ein Kiddushin Tovsim B'chai Ve'lavim, what you should say is, Aval Chachamim Omrim, Ein Mamzer Mechai Ve'lavim. Why do you say, Ein Mamzer Mi Yevama? I mean, it's not a din that is limited to Yevama, is it? So what is this? Lema Ein Mamzer Mi Yevama? Oh, says the Gemara, you're absolutely correct. But this is not going like the Chachamim will argue on Rabbi Akiva. This is going according to the other Shita in Rabbi Akiva. Remember we had before that Rabbi Akiva does not necessarily hold that every Isser Lav is considered to be capable of producing Mamzerut. He only was talking about the Lavim of She'er, where it has something to do with an incestuous relationship. That produces a mamzer, even if it's only a lav. So let's say the case of Kivan Shelo Bana Shuv Lo Yivneh. Well, that's an extension of the of an incestuous relationship to a brother's wife. Or the idea of Bayit Echad Uboneh Veino Boneh Shnei Batim. That is, in fact, an extension of concepts of She'er. Yes, there you could have a mamzer. But Michai Ve'lavim Greideh? Lotia Eshet Amet Achutza? I mean, that's not a relative. That's just a general din, right? Anybody. Nobody's allowed to marry this woman because she's still bound up. All right, so then, Michai Ve'lavin Grede Lo'avi Mamzer. That's why it puts it this way, because it was not a normal halacha that, like the Chachamim would say, no lav creates Mamzerut. So the truth is that we have a machlokas bichlal about the particular situation of a Yevama who accepts Kiddushin from another guy. Is that Kiddushin Tofes or is it not? Now, this entire idea is a reflection of the concept of the Tana Deve Eliyahu, which is a remarkable concept and has very much to do with this time of the year, with Shavuos. And the Tana Deve Eliyahu says that in Olam Hazeh, the only access that we have to the Or HaTorah is through Torah Shebaal Peh, which is the Amelut B'Torah, which is in the Brit of B'chukotai. But in Olam Haba, we will be able to be Zocha to see the Or directly from the Torah Shebiksav. And as we know, whenever we trace that Torah Shebaal Peh and we see the beauty of how the Pusik was meramis, all of those things, it's mind-boggling. It's so beautiful. It's so poetic. We'll be able to access that poetry directly. But only as a schus in Olam Haba. Now, this Gemara is exactly what it is that Shmuel is pointing out. And that is, we have over here a pasuk that says, Lo tiyeh eshet ameis achutza le'izar. Can you translate that pasuk for me? Because one way of translating it is, like I used to tell you about those cars we used to steal from Army Surplus, and they all had these letterings on it that said, this car will not start without a seatbelt. Right? I told you it's amazing. As a kid, this used to drive me crazy. What does this mean? It will not. They hadn't even invented seatbelts on normal cars then. It was only in the army. And then, so I thought maybe there's like some kind of electrical thing that when you plug it in, so then you can get the car started. But we always used to hotwire these cars. We never had the keys to them anyway. So we used to hotwire these cars and they worked perfectly well, whether there was a seatbelt or there wasn't a seatbelt. And it took me so long to realize that in the army, the fact that you say you're not allowed to do something means it will not be. This car will not start, which means don't you dare, right? So now the question is, when the Torah says, Lo tiyeh eshet amet, does that mean this will not happen? Or does it mean don't do it? If it means this will not happen, so then it means it's actually wired that you can't hot start it. So if you try to give Kiddushin to the Eshet Amet Achutza, the Kiddushin will not be Tofes because the Torah says it won't happen, right? Or does it mean don't do it? Now, there's two very completely different ways of understanding the statement. And it's here that Shmuel says, look, in our current dimensionally challenged vision, which is a state of true aniyut, who knows? So it's very nice the way that he puts it. Okay, so let's take a look at the idea over here. So Rav Yehuda says that what Rav Paskin was, that Minayin Kedusha Tov Sibi Yevama. Let's say somebody tries to marry a Yevama and she's a Yevama Lashok. The Torah says, Lo Tiyeh Eshet HaMeita Chutz LiYisrael. This is not going to happen. That means Lo Tiyeh Bahava Yalizah. That I'm telling you right now, there cannot be Kedusha that will take place. Remember that Havaya, the Halcha Vahaita, LeYisha Cheret. Every time the Torah uses that word Vahaita, or any lashon of haya, avaya, in terms of a relationship of a man and woman, it is referring to the status of kedusha. So in here, it says lo tihiye, which means there cannot be such a concept of kedusha to an ish zar. Whereas Shmuel says, well, ba'aniotenu, being in our current state of being dimensionally challenged, we don't know how to read that. And therefore, tzricha get. Because misapkele l'shmuel, when it says lo tiyeh, is that telling me do not? Ila lavu diata? Is it simply telling me do not attempt to marry an eshet, a yavama to an ishzar? Or is it telling me it can't happen? So I don't know whether it's lo lavu diata, or is it actually telling me the lo tafsi bekedushin hu diata? And omele Rav Mori Barochel or Rav Ashi, look, we paskin like Shmuel, that it's basically a suffix, and therefore you're going to need a get. And Omer of Ashi, Hashtad Yomer HaMemar Hilchot HaKavate de Shmuel. Well, now that he paskened like that, so in the event that the Yovam was a Kohen, and she had gone ahead and married another man, so then the best thing to do under these circumstances, where the whole thing was a mistake, is let the Yovam do Chalitza, because there's no way that she can get back to the actual Yavam, because the Yavam is a Kohen. So what are we going to do for this poor girl? You know, so he's going to give her a get, and then what? Then nothing. She's not going to be married to either of them. So, I mean, it makes more sense to let the Yavam do just Chalitza, and Chalitza does not asser a woman to a Yisrael, so let her stay with the second guy that she married that she wasn't supposed to marry. What? I don't understand. It gure itkar, somebody does an isser and he gets a reward for doing the isser? Im kein matzino chote niskar. I mean, now obviously this doesn't mean did an isser knowingly, but the bottom line is that we're saying, well, you know, the guy is already in a matzav like this. I mean, yeah, you don't make life hard on her. I mean, what do you mean? They did the wrong thing. And we said before that there were always additional investigations that could have been conducted. I mean, if you really cared not to be over, you could have made sure not to be over. This follows that previous understanding that there was always a way to find out if you really wanted to. You took the easy way out. So that what, we're going to reward you for that? Okay, fine. So you know what? What Rav Ashi actually said was the other way around. If the Yavama was not a Kohen, he was a Yisrael, then have the husband, the one who took her, the other guy, he should give her a get, according to Shmuel, notein la sheni get, and then she is muteret to the Yavama. So I agree. We shouldn't say chote nizkar. All I was pointing out is that if the Yavam is a Yisrael, then it's not going to asser her on him. Nobody said that. They just were talking about the suffix about whether she needs a get. Omer of Gil, Omer of Chir Bar Yosef, Omer Rav, Yavama may not have Kedushin. Okay, that's what Rav said, lo tiyeh. But she sure as heck has Nisuin, which is very weird. I mean, are we talking about the Yavama that we meant before, that she married somebody on the basis of Edus that turned out to be wrong? So what is Rav saying? She doesn't need a get if she accepted Kedusha, but she does need a get if she went ahead and went to the Chuppah? This makes sense. I mean, what would that mean? E Kedusha ain't ba Nisuin, nami ain't ba. I mean, Nisuin is just the culmination of the process of Kinyan that began with Kedushin. I mean, if you're telling me that the Torah is saying lo tiyeh, that she cannot be married, so understand. So what? So just because you put up a fake chuppah, so therefore now she is married? And the point is that the Torah said you can't have Kinyanim on this woman. So now how all of a sudden is Rav saying, but there is an assuming. It doesn't make any sense. No, you're right. That's not what Rav said. He must have said that Kiddushin vin Nisuim ain ba. She does not have Kiddushin or Nisuim. Oh, you know what? When he said Nisuim Yeshba, maybe he meant a big chiddush, that if they went to the chuppah, then it's considered to be the equivalent of having had intimate relations with each other, despite the fact that they never really consummated the marriage. Going to the chuppah itself is considered to be sufficient to asser her, as Rav Amnuna said. The Omer Rav Amnuna, a shomeret yavam, shezinta becomes asura leyivama, and you cannot get yibum, you just get chalitza. That's what Rav was saying. That if she went to the chuppah, even though they claim they never slept together and they were never alone together, and we know they were never alone, just under the chuppah, and so on, nonetheless, it doesn't matter. He's not allowed to be miyabim. Maybe that's what Rav meant, you know? I don't know. He might have meant either. He might have meant that. Or maybe he meant something else. Maybe when we said originally that there's a difference between Nisuin and Kiddushin, he said Kiddushin ain't but Nisuin yeshba means indeed in terms of requiring her to get a get minasheni, like our Mishnah. Because if not, people are going to get confused between the woman that started this parak, where her husband goes overseas, and we remat to her, and then she gets married to the other guy, and we said she does need a get, and over here, if we say she won't need a get, so people are not going to understand the consistency of those halachas. All right, so we've got three possible explanations in Rav. Anyway, who's the halacha like? Rav, who says that Kedushin is in Tofes, or Shmuel, Alon, mute, sweetie, or Shmuel, who says that perhaps it is Tofes. Omer Rabbi Yanai, I can tell you that in the Holy Chabura, man, they were Nimnu Begomro, they took a vote on this, and they came out with the psak of Ein Kedushin Tofsim B'Yevama, and that they learned it basically the way Rav learned it, Lo Tiyeh, there cannot be Kedushin. So what we're talking about over here, in the terms of the Chabura, this is possibly a Chavura of Tanoim that Paskin, and things that hadn't been Paskin beferish in the Mishnah or Braita, and they Paskin. Okay, it's a whole big question over here. There's a lot of discussion among the Rishonim and among the historians that are, you know, the historians that wrote Braitas, that wrote Sfarim, at the time, what exactly the Chabura? What is the Chabura? Anyway, so Rabbi Yochanan asks his Rebbe, who is Rabbi Yanai, Rebbe, I mean, I don't understand what we need this Chabura for. Lo Mishnatenu Hizo? I mean, it seems to me that this is in our Mishnah. Our Mishnah meaning our Seder HaMishnah, because this Chabura was outside of our Seder HaMishnah that Rebbe wrote. And isn't it in our Seder HaMishnah, which is a Mishnah in Kedushin? So the Mishnah Kedushin says, Ha'omer le'isha, hareyat mekudeshet li, la'achar she'etgayer. Look, the Mishnah talks about over here, adover shelo ba'la olam. Can you make a kinyan on adover shelo ba'la olam? So in this case, if there's no shaychus currently to the act of Kedushin, and you want to go ahead and give a ring where the Kedushin should be chal at a time when there is a possibility of Kedushin. So then the Mishnah lists all of those cases and says that does not work. So for instance, you have a goy who comes along and he says to this Jewish girl, look, I'm on my way to becoming a ger. I'm supposed to get my papers next month. Here is this ring. And as soon as I become a ger, the Kedushin should be chal. So Ariat Mekudeshet Lila Achashet Gayer. Or a Jewish man comes to a non-Jewish woman who is in the process of becoming a Gioret and says, look, I want to make sure nobody gets you first, you know? So here is your ring. The moment you get those papers, pow, you're married to me, right? So La Achashet Gayeri. Or if he's an Eved, La Achashet Shtachrer. Or if she's a Shivcha, La Achashet Shtachri. Or if she's currently married, after I've managed to poison your husband, at that point you should immediately be married to me. So Akashi Amut Baalech, oh La Akashiachlo, oh La Akash Tamut Achotech, after your sister to whom I'm currently married dies. Well, he's poisoning someone else this time. So whenever that takes place, then you'll be married to me. And it throws in this last case, Li Akashiachlo Tzlech Yevimech. after your Yavama, your Yavam, gives you Chalitza. Ena Mekudeshet. Why Ena Mekudeshet? Because it's a Davar Shelo Haya Ba'olam, meaning that as a current Yavama, she is not in the Parsha of Kedushin, says Rabbi Yochanan. You see, we compare this to being not Jewish. It's not in the Parsha of Kedushin. Obviously, that is a Mishnah openly paskening like Rav. Okay? So I understand what we need the Chabura for. So explain to me, Rebbe, why did you quote the Chabura? Says Rabbi Yochanan, look, man, if I hadn't lifted up this big rock, do you think you would have found the oysters and the pearls on your own? No. First, somebody had to get the rock out of the way. That's me. Now, it's always the guy who finds the pearls, you know, so now it's all him. Ha! You would never have understood the Mishnah that way. You would have thought, if I hadn't told you that we paskin like Rav, you would have thought that the Mishnah is simply saying that where you cannot achieve something now, for whatever reason, not because it's Dovah Shalom Bali Olam, but you cannot achieve something now because something is in the way of the Kenyan being Chal. So maybe the idea over here is, since she's married to this other guy, the Kenyan is not allowed to be done now, so you want it only to be done later. You can't do it later if it can't be now. But not because of the low Dover Shabbat Bolam. Now that I told you that we pass on like Rav, now you see that the common denominator in the Mishnah is that it's a Dover Shaloya Bolam.
Rebbe, it's the benefits of an archaeological dig. It's in the field, it's picking up a piece of pottery.
You should have known that he'd get in a commercial statement. And yet, when it comes time to say a word from our sponsor, you'll notice that there's never anything that's being delivered. Just images. So, says Resh Lakish to Rabbi Yochanan, you know, your Rebbe is very nice to you because he says that you found a pearl. So he thinks you're pretty smart, you know. But if he hadn't said that, I would have said that this is stupid. Ilav dekasalach kavra rabba. If it wouldn't be that such a great man, your Rebbe, Rabbi Yochanan, said that you found a pearl, I would have told you the Mishnah has nothing to do with anything, because how do you know that the Mishnah is not going to leave it to Rabbi Akiva? And of course I leave it to Rabbi Akiva. It's a Dover Shelo Ba'olam because it's an Isser Lav. And therefore, in Kedushin Tosef B'chayvei Lavim. And therefore, this Mishnah has nothing to do with the price of eggs in China. So what are you coming along and telling me? Well, we know it from the Mishnah. You don't know nothing from the Mishnah. Ma'asizin Rabbi Akiva Yidiyomer in Kedushin Tosef B'chayvei Lavim. You're lucky that I can't argue on your Rebbe, you know? I don't know why not. Well, says the Gemara, I'll tell you why not. Because if this Mishnah were really a statement by Rabbi Akiva, so then when it says over here, I'm giving you Kedushin La'achar she'achlotz le'chivimich, I get news for you, buddy. According to Rabbi Akiva, it would actually work. Because Rabbi Akiva holds Odom Yakna Dover Shelo Bali Olam. So therefore, according to Rabbi Akiva, the whole thing wouldn't work out, you see? Because, in fact, if you're going like Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Akiva is not bothered by the fact that something is Shelo Bali Olam. So why wouldn't you be able to make a condition that the Kedushin will be Chal later? It says, a woman says, I'm making a neder that anything that I make is going to be usher on you, you bum. And so all my money or anything that I stitch up or whatever, ain't circle offer. The balin doesn't have to make any kind of afora on that because it's not in her rights to answer that because that was already owned by the husband in exchange for the mizonas. Rabbi Akiva says, no, it's best to be made for it now, because if at some future time she goes and she does more than what he has a right to take. So she's, because Rabbi Akiva holds that in the case where a woman goes beyond her chiyav of production in terms of thread or whatever it is that she's her crafts that she's working in, that then she gets to keep it. So if she does that, then it'll be usher. And therefore, you better be made for that netter now before it's too late. So you see, I'll leave it to Rabbi Akiva. She can usher with a netter something that does not exist now. And therefore, the Mishnah cannot be going according to Rabbi Akiva. We'll see how Reish Lakish justifies his approach that the Mishnah could be going like Rabbi Akiva tomorrow. But meanwhile, we've got these wonderful additional chidushim over here, extension of the halacha of the Edus, which we still don't know exactly, Eid Echad, Shnei Edim, to be discussed tomorrow, into the area of Yibum itself. And, of course, what finally to figure out, what is the status, legabe chalos of kiddushin, or nisuin on a yevama l'shuk, which, agav, of course, is the real topic of this Mishnah.